You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony
D. Hour three rolling along this morning. Glad you could be with us as the NBA Finals have been pretty much Dudley here in the Eastern Conference, Western Conference Finals. But the Lakers and Nuggets series has been interesting from a better fight. The Celtics haven't been giving. That's been what we've been buzzing about this morning, is that after the Celtics last night basically gave away game three and just quit, in the middle of the game and decided not to even try to win it and not even try to get back into it. And sometimes it's demoralizing when you do put out a little bit of an effort. Next thing you know, you're like, oh, we're 20 points down. Oh, that's not working. Or you make an adjustment that fails miserably, like, hey, Derek White needs to go back in the lineup. We're going to go small. And the Miami Heat exploit it. And the cool thing about the Miami Heat, this is why they should be thrilled with last night. This wasn't playoff Jimmy scoring 37 or 42 points or 53 points. This was Gabe Vincent leading the team in scoring. This was Duncan Robinson driving the lane and laying it up. This was everybody else on this team that was described last week as the land of misfit toys. These were guys, undrafted guys, all contributing to winning this game and winning this series, which eventually they will. I don't know if it happens on Tuesday night or if they get it back to Boston. I don't know. But I know the Miami Heat are not losing four in a row. Not losing four in a row. They didn't lose. I don't think they've lost back-to-back games in these playoffs. So they took Milwaukee out in five, so they didn't do it there, and they didn't do it against New York. So no. So they're not losing four straight. And likewise, I just think in the end, Denver is just a better team than the Lakers. I just think they're better. We're now starting to really see it. The Lakers are putting up a good effort, putting up a good fight, but the Nuggets are just too complete. And that's something that NBA fans are really going to see if the attention is to the finals. If everybody's attention now is on the finals, it's not the best finals matchup for the NBA, right? But in the end, it is what it is. The Nuggets could win this whole thing and be forgotten about 2 years later by the general public. Not by fans, of course, but by the general public. It could be one of those finals where you go, yeah, remember the Nuggets? They won. Or they could be so impressive that they win a couple more. But I doubt it, because I think the Western Conference is just going to be so good and so tough that it's just going to be too hard to establish something like Golden State had a couple of years. I think Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns are going to figure it out. They're going to put some players around those two guys. I think in the end, if Victor Wembanyama becomes as successful as people think he is, the Spurs are going to be back in the playoff picture. Now, when teams rise up, it means others fall. I mean, I don't know if the Golden State Warriors, what they're going to do this offseason in terms of how they're going to manage their money. I mean, who's out? Likely Draymond Green has an option in, but will likely become an unrestricted free agent. So I think that there's going to be some changes to the teams in the Western Conference. But the Nuggets will be around. Like, this team is built really well. They've locked the guys in. I think this is, they're going to be one of many in the conversation as teams rise and fall. My big question is, what about the Lakers? What happens after this? Is LeBron good enough to get this team back to where they just left off? Let's say the Nuggets wrap this thing up in five, which is my prediction, because I think the Lakers are very prideful, and I think there's going to be something about game four, a little bit more desperate. I think that I think they could close it. I think the Nuggets will close this out in five. I wouldn't be surprised if they sweep, but I think a gentleman sweep is more likely to happen in this series. I know.
I'm a fan, and I don't see that happening right now, just because, like I've been saying all morning, the Lakers have given them good runs. I mean, yeah, they've been competitive throughout this. It's just that it's almost as if the Nuggets have that eighth, ninth gear that they can slip into.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they did it. You're right. I wouldn't be surprised if they did it. But then would you put this Lakers team? Okay, now there's Russell Westbrook is gone. You have no problems with that anymore. The health is always going to be a factor, but health's a factor for everybody. Mr. Glass is going to have to stay healthy. Maybe they load manage him even better. I don't know. But this team is built pretty well around LeBron and Anthony Davis. There's a lot of good things to like about the way this roster is constructed. But Western Conference Finals again? I don't know. I think the team to watch for next season will be the Nuggets, but I also think it's Phoenix. I think Phoenix is going to have to figure out the Chris Paul question. It's going to have to figure out the DeAndre Ayton question. It's going to have to figure out the Monty Williams question as to who's going to become head coach now that he's gone. But I also think when you have one of the best players in the NBA and you're pairing him up with another young superstar, I think good things will happen for them. I think they'll be formidable. But this Nuggets team, it's built in a different way, right? It's built in a way that Jamal Murray is outstanding, but he's not a superstar. He's not a superstar. Nikola Jokic is. But you know what Nikola Jokic is? He's a superstar that's not a superstar like we think. That's the problem. Like, when we think of megastars in this league, we talk about characters that are a little bit larger than what they do, right? And Nikola Jokic is not that. He's not a recognizable face. He's not selling you products on TV. He's not going on the talk shows. He's not becoming something else. We just talked about Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony was a guy that that found ways to become larger than him. Like he was an NBA star that took advantage of an MTV audience, right? He married a girl that was from MTV, you know, and together he penetrated into the entertainment world. But Nikola Jokic is not going to do that. Like I said, he's a forgotten star, or he's an unrecognizable star, because his world and how he came into prominence comes with some bizarre circumstances. It comes with a good playoff run in a playoff series that nobody was watching. Two-time MVP, but didn't show up in the playoffs. People for the most part, the NBA and the NHL, people grow. They get into this later and later and later. The audience grows as the playoffs progress. It's like, I like the NBA. I don't have an NBA team, or I like the Indiana Pacers. They're not in it. But, you know, first rounds, there's games all over the place. They run into the night. It's like, all right, yeah, wake me up when things sort of calm down a little bit. All right, the semifinals, maybe I can follow this a little bit better. Or maybe I can follow the finals a little bit better. Now I'm into the finals, right, because there's a championship on the line. Well, Nikola Jokic wasn't going to be a part of that in America's conversation with what was going on in the postseason. How could he, right? What was going on the first playoff season after the bubble that nobody watched? Well, they lost in four straight to the Phoenix Suns. Really hard to make a name for yourself in the public when in the conference semifinals, you're losing to the Phoenix Suns. And Chris Paul becomes more of a story, and Devin Booker becomes more of the story. And then the second year, who do they lose to? They lose to Golden State in the first round. Again, a first-round series nobody's watching. So how do you sell Nikola Jokic to the American public when they don't see him at the time when you need to see stars the most? You don't. So when you've got NBA voters and they're saying like, oh, Nikola Jokic is a two-time MVP, he's one of the best players in the league, most of America is saying, how? Right? How? Because I'm not seeing him when you're supposed to present these to me as a casual fan of the NBA. But now that's not the case. Now you are seeing his incredible, ridiculous, 37, 21, and 14 in game one? Oh, that's nuts. And now he's going to be put on the big, big, big stage of the NBA Finals in one more win. One more win, and then that team that has been waiting for a moment like this is going to be on the stage. But you know what? The star of this Miami Heat team, Jimmy Butler on the other side, when they eliminate Boston, they're going to be one of those fascinating, fun stories that I think is going to make people write multiple, multiple articles about him and multiple features on them. And Eric Spoelstra, once again, showing how brilliant he is as a coach, right? The idea that players went to Pat Riley and tried to get him fired early in his career, and Riley stuck with this kid, shows how much more he's forgotten about basketball than most people know. Because he saw something in Eric Spoelstra that people probably didn't, including his own players. But now he's a win away.
No, it was a given.
Yeah, I mean,
when LeBron, Chris Bosh joined the team with Dwayne Wade, he's like, oh, they'll give him a season. That was it.
Yeah, and then what did they do in that season? They lost to Dallas in an embarrassing fashion.
Then that would have been the end of Spoelstra, right?
That was it, right? Supposed to be the end of Spoelstra. And not only has he survived, look at what he's got. They're killing Boston.
I mean,
they are
Boston. But it's a whole career's worth.
It is. I mean, it's three conference finals in the last 4 years with pretty much Jimmy Butler.
Right. That's right? It.
Bam Adebayo is great, and you can talk about all these other guys. But you know what? They're doing it without a guy that, like Tyler Hero. We kept saying over and over again, how are they doing this without Tyler Hero? He's so important to their offense. But they found a way to do it without Tyler Hero. Like they're not squeaking. That's the thing about this. They're not squeaking by in seven-game series. They're beating the crap out of the teams that they're playing in the playoffs. I mean, they're killing Boston in a way. Boston is like, God, get us out of here. Like, get us out of here. We can't. I'm not going to deal with this anymore. Jimmy Butler's calling timeout, looking at the bench or the Boston bench, doing the timeout sign like Al Horford did in game one. Like, I'm messing with you guys. It's great.
But yeah, in his coaching career, he's only missed the playoffs twice, or I mean, three times.
Nuts.
And everything else, I mean, it's like, you know, one NBA championship, lost NBA finals, lost in conference semifinals. He has a couple of first round exits, but he has a lot more, hey, we made it all the way, we just couldn't finish it out.
Right, exactly.
Than he does anything else.
Exactly.
He's lost in the NBA finals three times.
Yep. He's lost two with the big three and then lost in the bubble.
I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing. It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's not going to be ideal, and I know people will talk about it, but I'm going to remind people, if you love the NBA and you're going to watch the finals regardless of who's in it, don't worry about what people say about ratings. Don't worry about when you see people say, oh, the NBA, only 1.5 million people watch the finals. Don't worry about that. Let the executives figure that out and what that means for TV rights and all that stuff. It's not for you. Somebody will have the NBA Finals on television at some point. You just may have to look for it somewhere else eventually, but somewhere it's going to be on, still going to be on TV, because it's still a live sporting event, and live sporting event is the most important thing TV has right now.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's Wake Up Call as we continue. Sean Devaney is going to join us. We'll talk NBA at the bottom of the hour. But so many bottles to choose from, there's always something new at Total Wine and More. How about a great Prosecco for under $8? Or a French Rosé for under $7? With the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine and More. Drink responsibly. B21. All right, so back to the PGA Championship. So Michael Block was the hero of the weekend. He was the teaching pro. He was one of 20 guys who are part of the PGA of America. They're not touring pros, but they're pros and they teach and they're part of the fabric of the game. 20 of them get allowed to be competitive in this major. He charges $150 for an hour of golf. I'm sure that price will go up, but maybe it won't. Maybe he's content with, look, My people can't afford it more than that, so I'm going to continue to do it at $150. But he made $288,000 for his 15th place finish and an automatic exemption into Valhalla last season. You know, golf is one of those sports where it is, you can have moments for one athlete in one time without disrupting the overall event. You know, you have to pause other sports to recognize individual achievement, right? So LeBron becomes the all-time leading scorer. You have to stop the game. You have a little bit of a ceremony, et cetera. Same thing in the NFL. Sometimes they stop the game and they get the football for the quarterback or the running back or whoever, and they pause for a bit. But the game has to continue. Golf is kind of the same way. I mean, you have to get off the green. You can only enjoy the moment. But it's the walk to the moment. And Michael Block had a hole-in-one. He was the only one to have a hole-in-one all weekend. Now, it's interesting because Oak Hill, when it had the 1989 U.S. Open, they had a par 3, I think it was the 6th hole. Now it's a par 5. They redesigned the course. But in the entire U.S. Open, there was 4 guys that made hole-in-ones on one day. It was very famous at the time. But there was only one hole-in-one all weekend, and that was by this guy who was writing this story of a nobody that shows up and is playing with the elite players from around the world, and he's holding his own in a way that is impressing everybody, including the tour professionals that he's playing with. And he completes the story. But after the hole-in-one, he made a bogey. And after he made the bogey, people were a little nervous. Like, they wanted this story to have even more meaning at the end. He wasn't going to win, but could he get into the top 15? Could he get into the top 15 so that he has another story to tell? And on the 18th hole, he knocked his second shot into the crowd, and he needed to get up and down from a very, very tricky situation. And he hit a perfect pitch shot, a pitch shot that landed right on the fringe, ate up the heat of the ball, meaning it's and then just trickled down to where he could make a very makeable putt. And when he stood over that putt, and everybody knew this is for getting into the top 15 and getting an automatic exemption into the PGA Championship next year in Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky, and he drained it. And after he drained it, everybody lost their mind, and everybody was going crazy. And you can have that burst of energy for one person, that one moment of excitement. It really makes golf, which is not that exciting of a sporting event, very exciting because of the explosiveness that can come from any single moment. Just that hole-in-one, for example, was so electric. It was nuts. And they didn't even show it live on TV. Nance had to sort of set it up without giving away the lead. But it was you know what was great about it? When I watched it like twice, when Michael Block hits the shot, it's on that shot tracer thing that they have where they show you kind of where the arc of the ball is. It's heading right for the pin. Like, there's just this straight line that's going up right toward the, and you're thinking, all right, you're not showing this unless it's good, right? But nobody could think it would be a hole in one. Right? That's the thing. It couldn't have been a hole in one. Maybe he knocks it to 2 feet. Maybe he locks it to 2 inches. But then it goes in on the fly and it completes a storybook weekend. We love these stories in sports. And Amanda Baliones had an interview at the end of his round that had a lot of people in tears. I mean, even I got kind of watery-eyed. Now, I'm a cynic. I don't really like that kind of stuff. But I even got, like, watery-eyed. And she's conducting the interview with him, and he's talking about his week and how amazing it was. And she shows him video of the clubhouse in California where all of his friends and students and members and whatever, they're all gathered in the bar in California to watch him. And they're and she's showing him the reaction of the crowd to his hole-in-one. And she says to him, you know who sent us this video? Your son. And he starts to get a little emotional because his son's sick and couldn't make the trip, but he's at the course. And when Amanda Baliones was texting the son, getting this video and whatnot, he said to her that for him, the son, it was the greatest day of his life. The greatest day of his life is watching his father make a hole-in-one on the final round of the PGA Championship. And this brings Michael Block to tears. It brings him to tears. He doesn't belong in this glamorous world of golf, but he is at the core of what golf is. Golf is played by people who need a $150 lesson, an hour learning how to play the game so that they can get around the course in a decent time. It's about a guy that is in the clubhouse, setting tee times, setting up tournaments, all of those things, as well as giving lessons. And it's one of those moments that you won't see anywhere else. You won't see it in any other places. You might see it at Wimbledon where maybe some local qualifier gets in and makes a good run in the semifinals, whatever it is. But it's not going to happen in baseball. Even when you have a minor league player get called up like that Pirates guy did after all the years in the minor league baseball, he's still playing competitive baseball. It's not on the level of the major leagues, but he is playing on a daily basis competitive baseball to one day take the next step. Michael Block doesn't exist in a universe where finishing in the top 15 at a major championship is his world. That's completely foreign to what he does. He's a professional golfer. He's a teaching pro, but he's not a traveling tour player. He plays in a few tournaments, but he's not playing the best in the world every week. And he doesn't have a moment other than playing with some of his friends, like Patrick Cantlay was his friend, and he has a couple of guys that he knows. He's not playing in a way that tour players play where they go, I need to get better at that. Like, I noticed my statistics on up and downs from bunkers. I've got to go 8 hours to a bunker and hit bunker shots until I get it right. And I'm hiring psychiatrists and swing trainers, and I got a staff of people to do nothing but make sure my game is in tip-top shape for world competition. He doesn't exist in that world. This is so unique in sports. Even backup quarterbacks that lead teams to playoff wins are in the building every day. They're watching the film every day. They're in practice every day. They're suiting up every day, right? This is, again, this is fish out of water. This is a completely different setting for these guys that get a chance to play in the PGA Championship. It is like an amateur playing, you know, when we see a young college kid. But I always go, yeah, but you know what? These young amateurs, sometimes they have the confidence. When you were 21, you thought you could take on the world, right? That's what some of these golfers who have really good appearances in majors, that's what happens to them. They're like, I don't care. I'm 20. I mean, they say, but when you're 46 and you've been through the war and you know, I don't have a touring game. Like, he knew that. He said he went to Q school when he was younger, and he said he was relieved when he didn't make it because he just did not feel like he had it to grind week in and week out going up against the best players in the world to make a living. Like, when you don't make the cut, you don't get any money. And when you don't make the cut, the people that sponsor you and help you get on the tour, they want a return a little bit on their investment. And it's a grind. If you're not capable of making cuts and winning tournaments, it's a grind. And he knew, I'm better off doing what I'm doing. I'm going to teach. I'm going to be a pro. I'm going to be a local pro. And it was just a remarkable story. And you just don't see it very much in sports. Everything that you can compare it to in other sports, you're still away from the main story. He's not a pro like Sergio Garcia is a pro, you know, or Phil Mickelson's a pro, or Tiger Woods is a pro, or Rory McIlroy's a pro. He's a pro in that he makes money at the game, but he makes it in a completely different way. And I hope it's remembered as one of the better stories of the year when it's over. When 2023 is done and we're in late December and we're thinking on some of the better moments of the year, I hope it's remembered as one of the better moments of the year, because it was fun. It was fun to watch a 46-year-old guy, you know, go out there and hear roars he's never heard before, see crowds he's never played in front of before. He's never played in front of a crowd that large, except in other event, you know, other PGA. Like, but a Sunday at a major, like, keep every souvenir you can, man. Like, seriously, go to the clubhouse and take the menu, right? Go to the locker room and take your nameplate. Like, fill your bag up with everything about Oak Hill you possibly can. And Valhalla, too. When you get to Valhalla, do the same thing. So it was one of the better stories. All right, Sean Devaney is going to join us. We'll talk NBA playoffs. How badly are the Celtics and the Lakers in trouble? We'll talk about that and the success of the Heat and the Nuggets. Let's continue. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Sean Devaney for NBA. We'll talk to him about the Eastern Conference, Western Conference Finals. By the way, Western Conference Finals continuing tonight. Lakers is hosting the Nuggets, down 0-3. No team has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit. It's a little weird that both of the conference finals have teams up 3-0. That's not what you want. I mean, you don't want your competitive series early, even though it's better to get you the better seating, you know, whatnot. The 4-5 matchup should be close and whatnot. But we're not getting good Western Conference and Eastern Conference finals. We're getting quick doses and quick outs. Some of the better, you know, finals teams. I mean, look, the Miami Heat, I mean, they may be an 8 seed, but they've shown that they're not misseeded. I don't want to get that, because seeding is not an objective thing. It's you get what you get because of your regular season. But they're as good as any team in the Eastern Conference because they caught the run the right way. And the Lakers were the same way. I mean, the Lakers going into these playoffs, while they were a 7 seed and had to go to the play-in tournament, it was still like, okay, hold on. You know, like, things are better now. Like, they're healthier. Russell Westbrook's gone. You know, so maybe they're going to play better than a 7 seed. And they did. You know, after beating Memphis and then Golden State, there was a lot of things to like about them going into the series with the Nuggets, but the Nuggets now have a 3-0 lead. Sean Devaney joins us, Heavy.com on the NBA, brought to you by our Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, looking for a career path with flexibility and great pay and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
Good. All right, let's talk about the Eastern Conference Finals last night. The insertion of Derek White into the lineup to go small. Was that the right move for Joe Mazzulla? In theory, it didn't work out, but was that something that he felt like he needed to do and that was the right thing to do, at least at that moment?
Yeah, I mean, certainly they haven't gotten off to good starts. They made the switch in the last series to Robert Williams, and going back to Derek White is something that really that they've done all year. I don't forget Robert Williams has been hurt for most of the year. So, yeah, that certainly logically made a lot of sense. And, you know, the Celtics were there and going back and forth with the Heat for a little bit. So I guess you could argue that it was somewhat effective. But it did not do the thing that ultimately the Celtics needed to do. And you could talk about anything else that went wrong with them. But ultimately, they just have not seen the kind of defense that they are capable of playing, that they played last year. We just have not seen that at all from them in this series. And certainly we did not see it there in game three. So, yeah, in theory it was the right thing, but it didn't do the one thing that it really needed to do.
What is – I know this is a large question here, but what's the matter with this Celtics team? They just – against Atlanta, they just couldn't put it away. Had to go back to Atlanta for game six. They were down 3-2 to Philadelphia. Now they're not even competitive last night. What's going – what are you finding about them that's not the same regular season Celtics that look like they could win it all?
Well, you know, I watched them a lot during the regular season, and this has not been uncommon that we're – you know, they can really be a team that when they're moving the ball and everything's popping, when they play with defensive intensity and they're focused, they can really be unstoppable, and they can do that for 40 minutes, and then they just let go of the rope for the last 8 minutes. You see it time and time again with this team where they start to get into individual ball, hero ball, and they don't really play as a team. That's something that they've done all year. And I think it's really, really being exposed by both Miami and to an extent it was by Atlanta as well.
And on the flip side of that, here's the Miami Heat team that we know Eric Spoelstra is a brilliant coach, but they were down Tyler Hero in that series against Milwaukee. People thought that would be a factor. How have they overcome that to get to a position where they're one win away from the finals and playing with guys again where Gabe Vincent's the leading scorer? It's not always been Jimmy Butler. It's not Jimmy. Right. It's not Jimmy Butler dragging a team kicking and screaming to the finals. He's getting help.
Yeah, and then Duncan Robinson has certainly played very, very well. We've seen Max Strus have some terrific games, some terrific moments. And Bam Adebayo, who's, you know, very unpredictable. When he's really engaged, he is just an absolute beast, but that doesn't always happen. So, yeah, there's been a lot around Jimmy Butler that probably gets overlooked because these guys weren't necessarily drafted. But they're good players, so there is that. I think the thing that Spoelstra does and what he's done over the last couple of years is that he's found guys that he likes, that he knows are going to give them some real effort, and that have a certain skill or a couple of skills that he knows he can use in his rotation. And all throughout the year, he gives these guys minutes. He was doing it with, say, Gabe Vincent last year. Caleb Martin is a guy that, and, you know, don't forget they had Max Strus was on a two-way when they first got him.
Yeah.
So they've got these guys, and what Spoelstra does, he gives them a little bit of taste, and he gets to understand what he can expect from them so that when they get to this time of year and he puts them out there, he knows what he's getting. He knows what to expect.
On the flip side, let's go to the Western Conference. And, you know, when looking at this game, this series, I feel like I'm getting a pretty good effort from Los Angeles, just not enough to beat the Nuggets. Is there something missing that the Lakers aren't doing that has allowed them to be in this series with Denver?
Yeah, you know, I don't think the defense has – I don't think they appreciated how good the Nuggets were offensively, especially down the stretch. You know, where the Lakers have been tight and they've had it there, but they have not played very good clutch defense. I think that's really been an issue for them. And certainly the Nuggets have been able to expose that. When you've got as many guys, when you can go from Jamal Murray in one half and then lean on Nikola Jokic on another half, in the second half, you know, that's really hard to defend. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing is offensively, they couldn't have game plans for D'Angelo Russell being as ineffective as he's been, because he's been really, really good for them since they acquired him back in February. So it's a bit of a surprise that he's playing as poorly as he has on the offensive end, and he's really been that number three option, that number three scorer, and so just over the course of this series, you know, he's had his moments, but he's not been there mostly, and you know, that's something that They just don't have enough other role players offensively to make up for that.
What is your theory? Is to, Mike Malone pointed this out, and I get it. We live in a LeBron world, and it's a Laker-dominated media. But what is it about this Nuggets team that they aren't getting attention? They haven't gotten attention until attention is warranted because of the position they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, they play in Denver, and you know that's always going to be it's sort of like a weird time zone, and you know they're not necessarily playing the late Pacific games. They don't get a lot of national TV attention. Jokic isn't a guy who kids are looking at Jokic and saying, man, I want to grow up to be like him, because you can't, you know. You look at Steph Curry and you can say, okay, maybe I can grow up to be Steph Curry, but you look at Jokic and you can't be, you know, a 7-footer who does the things that he does. I think there's a lot of that, that sort of traditional marketing issues that Denver has, both in terms of location and just the fact that Jokic is sort of a one-off and doesn't necessarily resonate so much with young American fans as some other guys do.
Are you surprised by this? I mean, look, we get to the conference finals. You get two series. They're supposed to be the best of the best. Now we're getting finals where we're just waiting for them to end so we can find out when the Nuggets and Heat are going to have game one.
Yeah, I am really surprised. I'm disappointed too. I think it's been a really good playoffs, and I was looking forward to both of these series. But frankly, I thought the Lakers had a pretty good chance at winning, and I thought there was no doubt the Celtics would win. So I've been very wrong personally, but it's been an unpredictable playoffs in a good way, and of all times for it to turn unpredictable in a bad way, this is the worst time for Adam Silver and certainly a broadcaster. So it's really a disappointing end. It's what's been a pretty good postseason up until now.
Have the Nuggets shown anybody how to, like, a different way to build a team? They built this team around Jokic, but they brought in solid players. Like, I think of Bruce Brown, who's found a role. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's found a role. Is there a way to build this? I mean, maybe Spoelstra's kind of doing the same thing, I guess. But is there now another way to build a championship team? It takes a little bit, but maybe a different way?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that the super team way of doing things is pretty well dead. You know, that Kyrie and Kevin Durant have pretty much crushed that model. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, that getting a bunch of cap space and signing a superstar, that's not going to cut it. None of the teams that are remaining in the playoffs are really built that way. So I think that was probably dead long before the Nuggets. But there's no question that drafting well is back. Finding good role players. You mentioned Caldwell-Pope and Brown. I mean, those guys and Christian Braun, the rookie as well from Kansas. Those guys are very, very critical to what they do. Aaron Gordon, guys like that. Having guys like that are really, really important. And just going out and signing a bunch of superstars, that ain't going to work anymore.
Sean Devaney, Heavy.com on the NBA. Thank you so much for your time, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right, Tony. Thanks.
You got it. As we continue, it is Wake Up Call. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue on a good Monday morning.
Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks to Sean Devaney from Heavy.com on some NBA. Well, again, game four tonight, Lakers and Nuggets. So, with both teams, Nuggets and the Heat up 3-0. Yeah, it's been disappointing. I'm sorry. It's sad. You want these 7 games, 6 games, at the least 6 games. You want these battle back and forth. These are the two, the best of the best in each conference. And it's just poor Lakers and Celtics can't seem to compete against their opponents.
No. Change what you're saying. It's not the Celtics can't compete. It's that they decided not to compete.
They decided not to compete.
The Lakers can't compete against the Nuggets.
That's true.
You know, that's why I think it's a sweep. I think it's four games. I think it's a done deal tonight.
LeBron has not been swept in the playoffs since the 2007 finals.
And then look what happened afterwards. So
right.
Here we go.
Exactly. And after that, he was like, I'm finding my way out of this.
Another dynasty being built by LeBron.
Exactly. Hey, with so many bottles to choose from, there's always something new to try at Total Wine & More. How about a French rosé for under $7 or a great Prosecco for under $8 with the lowest prices for over 30 years? Find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. B21. All right. So, by the way, a little bit of PGA news from yesterday, not only with Brooks Koepka winning in LIV Golf, but Phil Mickelson did make the cut for the 100th time in his career in a major championship. So he didn't play well, but played well enough to make the cut. There you go. Our boy Phil. He loves to troll them PGA players, the PGA management.
Yeah, is the PGA just stewing today? Like, I would hate to be an intern or, you know, a lowly person at the PGA headquarters today.
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, Jay Monahan, especially the commissioner of the PGA.
Oh, no, I mean, he's probably livid.
He's probably furious.
With extra emphasis on the live.
Yeah, I wonder, we were talking earlier again with Jay Coffin. I don't know if it means more people will tune in to live because of it, but I
don't think it will.
I don't think it will. You know,
there's not a whole lot of people that tune into the PGA outside the majors.
But
for me, it's just, and me personally, and I think I represent a large group out there. You know, when it's like the Byron Nelson Classic, if I see something that's, hey, something worth watching, noteworthy, then maybe I tune in on Sunday.
Oh,
I'm not watching Friday or Saturday.
I'm not watching those. Like on Sunday, if I'm perusing the TV in the summer, especially where there's nothing else on, I'll be like, golf. All right, what's going on in the golf? Maybe it'd be interesting. Maybe Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler are in the lead. No, check that out. But I think the thing that Brooks Koepka did is what I was saying earlier this morning. I think, look, Harold Varner, Taylor Gooch, I'm trying to think of a couple of others that have joined LIV that don't have a major championship.
By the way, Taylor Gooch was the one I was thinking of.
You were thinking of Taylor Gooch?
Where they changed the rules.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And not allowing him to compete in the U.S. Open.
Right, right. So if you're Taylor Gooch and you're Harold Varner III, and there's a couple of others, that Joaquin Neiman, I think, is one of them. Mito Pereira is one of them, where they're not major champion winners. So there's only a limited amount of time. They only have a limited currency to get into the majors. And if they don't, they're never getting in. So if their goodwill, like if they've done something that goes, hey, with this, you get to go to the Masters for the next 3 years or whatever it is. When that runs out, there's nothing that they do outside of the majors that will get them into the majors. As long as the world rankings do not include live events, they won't have enough to get there. But if you are Brooks Koepka, if you're Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, like Dustin Johnson is a Masters winner. He's a U.S. Open winner. Patrick Reed won a Masters. Sergio won a Masters. Like these get you in to these majors for the Masters for the rest of your life. For others, you get like a 10-year exemption or a 5-year exemption or whatever it is. Once you have these opportunities, then you're, again, if you're okay with what LIV really is, which is a sports washing component of the Saudi Arabian government, if you're cool with that, this is a better life to live than running around on the PGA Tour a bunch of times for events you don't really care about to make less money so you can play in the majors. But if you're already playing in the majors, then LIV becomes a track. Like, Brooks Koepka is perfect for LIV. He doesn't want to be at Colonial. He doesn't want to be anywhere. Like, he doesn't want to play in these events. He doesn't want to play in the Genesis Invitational. Maybe the one in Phoenix is attractive, but like there's these other ones that are like, these aren't my thing.
And that's what's kind of, you know, we're looking at now. It's like, you know, what the PGA is I understand why they got to go to these smaller tournaments, but it's almost a flawed system.
Yeah, because
like I get it that you know, that's how you're making your money. That's how you're spreading the PGA fandom all throughout America. But I mean, when you penalize someone because they don't want to play.
Right. Yeah. So if you're Brooks Koepka, find me a flaw in his career plan. There isn't any, right? Like he plays well in majors. he's a PGA champion. He's now exempt into these other majors for a few more years. He's a two-time U.S. Open champion. He's won 5 majors. He's one of 20 golfers in the world to do it. Why not make $200 million at LIV?
Yeah.
Right? Why not? Like
he's home more often.
Why not play events in LIV where you're going to make a fortune and when you don't really care about the other stops on the tour anyway? So, but man, you could almost feel like people were pulling for Victor, like PGA Tour was pulling for poor Victor Hovland. Like, oh, kid, go out there and please do this for us. We can't watch a LIV. LIV's going to devour. Greg Norman's already devouring this. Bring the Wanamaker Trophy to the next tournament, that kind of thing. Oh, my God. Like, I'm serious. Like, the Masters, if they're the next LIV golfer that wins the Masters, if there is one, like, they get to keep the green jacket for a year, and then they got to return it. Would the Masters tell them you can't bring it to LIV events? Probably not. But they could. It's still their property. They could say, hey, by the way, we don't want to see this at LIV golf events. But hell yeah, I'd wear it at a LIV golf event. If I was Patrick Reed and I won it again, or if I'm Dustin Johnson, I'd be wearing it to every LIV event that for the next calendar year until I had to return it. Same with the Wanamaker Trophy. Take it with you wherever you go.
Yeah.
Right? Like, take the claret jug with you of a British Open.
But, I mean, hey, I'm still waiting for old, what's his name? Who's the Aussie again? Cameron Smith,
yeah.
You know, for him to be, you know, he brought that around as a chalice.
Of course he did. And by the way, right now, if you were to gather the four major championship winners right now, two of them are LIV golfers.
Yeah,
you know what
that's
I mean?
True.
50% of them are LIV golfers. So until the U.S. Open and the British Open are played, Cameron Smith is your British Open champion. Brooks Koepka is your PGA champion. And the Matthew Fitzpatrick won the U.S. Open and John Rahm won the Masters. But that's what you've got, folks. So LIV Golf is now, right now, until the U.S. Open is played next month at the L.A. Country Club, they have 50% of the major titles. They're golfers. So, yeah, if you're Greg Norman and LIV, you play this up because you've been hearing a lot of crap, and now you've got, you know, you won a major. Your golfer won a major. But again, it goes back to the sports washing thing. I think is it a beef? Are the golfers mad because it's this sport has been broken up, or are they mad because of what LIV actually is?
I
don't think they care what LIV actually is.
Well, we brought the argument a while back was that, you know, if LIV was backed by some German banker, some Swiss banker or whatever, I mean, what would the thought process be on it now?
Yeah.
We're already starting to see. I think Rory's looking at it now going,
Yeah, I think Rory is done, like, commenting on it. I think he's like...
He's definitely done commenting on it. He kind of threw in the towel towards Greg Norman. But could we see Rory joining in the fun going, you know, it's a great opportunity over there.
It wouldn't surprise me, but it would be so wild to see a guy who was willing to say things about other golfers that you just don't hear them say publicly.
Right.
Like he was willing to take the sword of criticizing Phil, criticizing anybody that was joining LIV. And for then, if he joined LIV, it would be, I don't know. Think of the wrestler hero to heel turn that we've seen in wrestling. Like it would be like that. You know what I mean? That would be nuts. But I do wonder if now, again, if you're a player, if you're a golfer if you're Justin Thomas. Now Justin Thomas says he's going to be on the PGA Tour because his dad was a PGA golfer, right? His dad was a Michael Block. So maybe it doesn't affect him. But some other golfers that are winning some majors, you got to go, God, man, their life is a lot easier than mine. I've got a major championships. I get to go to the British Open for the next couple of years. I get to go to the Masters for the next couple of years. Why don't I just roll with this 9-figure generational wealth payday, and I don't have to play 25 tournaments a year? Yeah, maybe so. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Lombardi Line is next right here on Sports Map Radio. Again, have a good rest of your Monday. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.